The Gist. Innovate, scale, succeed.
Hey, Jatinder, how are you?
I'm great, Lee. How are you?
I'm great. A little colder than I'd like to be honest, being here in Johannesburg, but all is well. All is well.
I hear you. Me and my heater have become best friends. I'm literally like sitting right on top of it.
It's kind of crucial. No, but I think it's really important to sort of just check on your friends during this panorama, man. Like everyone's going through the most and lots of people are away from home. So make sure they're nice and warm. Make sure that they're not too lonely and make sure they're also listening to The Gist, obviously.
1000% agree. And even if the friend doesn't respond to your message, just still message them, because I think you're right. Everyone is just going through the most and just taking it one day at a time. That's all we really can do right now.
Very much agreed. So yeah, we've kind of really enjoyed being here with you guys. And I think we're going to take, you know, a little bit of a gear change.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken to some really great guys, you know, both Josh and Jahil, I think are...
J&J.
J&J, and not like the vaccine. So
but not planned, but also, I'm completely supportive of this, actually. I think we just had it in our sights. Vaccinations. Give us vaccinations.
Hint, hint, the 35 to 49-year-olds who can go and get vaccinated. J&J, we had it first here.
If the South African government is listening, we would like to get vaccinated as well. Thank you.
No, but I mean, you're right. So changing gears. I mean, I think we really have, you know, chatted to some great guys who have been building and inspiring, you know, really great innovation. But they're men, B, and I think it's time to hear from a woman. What do you think?
I completely agree. I mean, woman does know best, no?
I mean, I think does know best, yes, but also, you know, approaches entrepreneurship very differently. And so it would be really cool to hear from a woman's perspective to see how do you navigate the space? How do you get started? How do you find a partner? How do you take your idea from something where, you know, we as women, I think, tend to overanalyze and overthink, and it's got to be perfect before we take that first step. Whereas men don't do that. They're like, we'll figure it out as we go along. And for better or worse, I think you need both. And so it'd be really cool to hear from a different perspective.
No, definitely. I think, you know, we always talk about this, about how women are the backbone of a lot of societies. If you give a woman a dollar, they're more likely to stretch it a bit further than a man will. But you don't really see as many leaders and as many CEOs of companies or founders that are women. And so it's quite important to have this conversation, to highlight some of the people who are actually doing it, one, but also talking to some of these women, I even get goosebumps because I'm like, actually, you know, you're so amazing. Why aren't there more of you doing this?
I completely agree with you. And more rare are the ones who are, you know, business leaders or entrepreneurs, and then their wives, and then their moms. And then it's like, can you have it all? Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe there is a way
maybe.
To balance
we hope
that.
So.
And we want to see more of those, because it makes it, I guess it's difficult to imagine what you can't see. And the more women we see kind of stepping up and showing us that you can have everything in maybe not an equal measure, but you can have everything. That's an exciting thing to be able to see.
No, I completely agree. And I think the other reason it's really important is to sort of just have more female founders on the podcast and highlight them a bit more, is that we often don't talk about this, and you go, you know, we're all on equal footing, but being a female leader is drastically different from being a male leader, be it in the workplace, be it in the entrepreneurial realm. There's a lot of other things that you have to consider, but there's also a lot more things that are sort of actually expected of you. You're expected to be a bit softer, you're expected to sort of mother people around you, you know, the gentle female touch. And these are things people don't even talk about ever, because they just assume you're all on equal footing. And the truth is, really, you're not. You're all kind of judged very differently, but also the expectations from the environment you're in are very, very different.
Absolutely.
So we're really, really excited about having our next guest on the podcast, because I think, you know, she gives a really good view of what it really does mean to be a female founder and female leader in the space.
Yeah, can't wait to chat to her.
Nelly Swafente is the co-founder of Spring Age, a youth-led innovation consulting firm that brings together dynamic people in South Africa to find innovative solutions for multinational companies, government bodies, and NGOs. Since its founding in 2011, Spring Age has engaged more than 600 young leaders and has worked with organizations such as Microsoft, South African Breweries, South African Reserve Bank, Woolworths, PepsiCo, and Securitas. Nelly Swa's passion for strategy and innovation, along with her desire to improve the world, led to her selection as one of the World Economic Forum's Global Shapers from 2013 to 2016. Nelly has also represented South Africa at the One Young World Conference in Zurich and was selected as a Mandela Washington Fellow for its flagship program of President Obama's Young African Leadership Initiative, also known as YALI. Nelly is incredibly impressive and highly accomplished and has been recognized by many, including Destiny Magazine, as one of the top 40 under 40 trailblazers. Welcome, Nelly. We are so excited to have you join us today. Maybe to get started, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Nelly Swahe?
Hi, Tatenda. Hi, Buhle. Thank you guys for having me today. I normally tell people that I was born in Johannesburg, and which I was. I was born in Tembisa, and I probably say sometimes that I'm from Johannesburg. But the reality is that, like, not a lot of people are from Joburg. So my family is from the Eastern Cape, in a place called Gamgra, for anybody who knows the Eastern Cape. It's in Dudra. That is where I grew up. But mostly grew up in Alexandra Township most of my life until I was about 18 years old. So yeah, that's kind of like my background. Someone the other day asked me if I could tell them about my family, and I was like, how long do they have? Because my dad has a lot of children, so I sometimes can't keep up. But yeah, generally I've got sisters and brothers, and that's me.
Been there, we've all been there.
Most of us.
Well, we are so excited to be talking to you today, because I think you've got such an interesting story, which we think so many people, I think, can resonate with. I think one of the things, though, is your first baby. We know you have some human babies, but your first baby, Spring Age. Tell us about that. What was your brainchild? What was the brainchild behind that? Have you always been entrepreneurial, or was that something you just fell into?
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Very cool question. And yes, Spring Age was my first baby. I think my entrepreneurial journey started when I was probably like 22 years old, when I worked for a life insurance company called All Life Insurance. And this was a company that provided life insurance for people living with HIV. At the time when I worked for that company, there wasn't a lot of talk about social entrepreneurship, but this is what these guys were doing, right? They were providing life cover to people living with HIV. And essentially their model was that they would give people life insurance if people were able to follow the adherence policy, i.e. keep themselves healthy and their viral loads are low. Anyways, I worked with these guys, kind of helping them set up the training and development department in their organization. And there were four engineers that started this business, and they were all friends. They were friends from university, and I was so inspired by them. I didn't know much about the entrepreneurial world, but they enabled me to go to meetings with them where they were, trying to raise funding for their organization. They would just teach me everything that they were doing. And at that time, I didn't know quite a lot, but I was just like taking it all in. And there was something that was starting to boil inside of me where I was like, geez, these guys are doing something really cool that is going to make a difference in the country, but they're also making money. That's really cool. Anyways, in that kind of inspiration, I came across another organization called The Learning Company that I started working for, which was also in the learning and development space. And it had a very interesting model in that they said, well, Nelly, you can work with us, but we don't have a contract. We don't have a contract for you. So we work based on trust. And I was kind of like, huh? And then they said, one of the things that you need to do is come up with your own thing that you want to do. And I was like, what kind of a job is this, you know? And the guys started explaining to me that, you know, everybody here has a thing. And then we go to market together as a group. And the group was in different parts of the world. And so I had to spend a lot of time trying to think about what my thing was. And in that process, I started thinking about young people. I started thinking about, you know, what makes young people shine in the workplace? How can young people's voices be heard? But I wasn't really sure what about young people. So I started asking the questions. And I bumped into a very old friend of mine, Raylene, whom we were friends in high school. So we were friends since we were 15 years old. And whilst having these thoughts in my head, she had done some really cool stuff in her youth as well. And she wanted to do something for young people as well. So anyways, we started getting talking and talking and talking. And then the idea of Spring Age was then born. So whilst I was kind of doing this work, it wasn't obviously an overnight process, but whilst I was doing this work, we started thinking about things like why there was a brain drain in our country or on our continent. So, this is not supposed to be kind of, it's kind of funny because I'm not in South Africa at the moment, but anyways, why there was a brain drain. Why there's a brain drain. Another question that we had, the National Development Plan of South Africa had just come out. And the question that we had was around, you know, where are the young people in these conversations about the NDP? And we had heard some stats around young South Africa was going to be having the youngest working population by 2025. And so it was all these stats that showed young people in kind of like a negative way. And at that time, we were like, well, this doesn't really describe me, you know. What if we created a platform where we could bring together the most dynamic young people in our country? Let's just bring them together. And Ray and I then, I mean, literally, we decided this over like one weekend. And we had our friends over, and at that company that I told you about that I used to work for, their offices used to be at the fire station in Rosebank. And we invited our friends to the fire station, and we just had a chat about South Africa, about Africa. This may have been like 2010, 2011. We just had these discussions about where we wanted to see our country and our continent go. And I remember after that day, my friend and I sat and we watched it at each other and we were like, oh, that was so awesome. But what a waste. What a waste it was to have the most incredible young people in one room and not create something. You know, we were just talking and we were not coming up with something. So that's where kind of Spring Age was born. We were called Ray and Nels for a very long time, where we would go and speak to different people and say, we bring young people together. And people say, oh, who's we? Oh, it's Ray and Nels. You know, we just bring our friends together and we talk about topics. And over time, that's how it kind of grew.
Amazing, amazing. I was actually just laughing as well when you were saying that they were saying, actually, you know, we work in trust. I was like, my first question would have been like, does trust actually pay the bills? But okay.
Yeah, trust did at that time, yeah.
No, it's so lovely to actually hear that, like, you know, you sort of had a co-founder and a friend to sort of walk through this journey with you. Because I think what people really struggle with very often is really finding people within their friend group with sort of like a common purpose and vision that they could sort of work on.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting hearing about how you really got started. But like, if we're going to go into the crux of it, maybe how could you tell our listeners a bit more about the actual business model? How does it practically work? what is a millboard? It sounds very trendy, but what does it actually mean?
Okay, so maybe let me carry on with the story. So we then just had these like moments where we'd bring our friends together, and we thought, okay, what if all these people came together in one room, and what if we could come up with ideas for our country? So we then looked at the NDP, because at least somebody in our country had looked at all the challenges, and then we would come up with ideas for challenges, right? And what we then said is that we'd just make sure we have different types of people in a room. We developed what was then called our spring age process, which was called a spring break. And it's a typical ideation process. So if you think about open IDEO and design thinking, a lot of those kind of innovation processes, we developed a process similar to that, where we would say we would look at a challenge and we'd get the right people to come up with ideas for that specific challenge. So we had three kind of rules. We'd say we needed a challenge, and we needed the young people, and then we needed a space to go and do this. And so that was kind of like the model at the beginning, in that we'd look at the challenge and then get the young people and so forth. We'd do that for a long time, and then realize that from each of these processes, what would be born would be kind of like a business that would be born from these processes. And then we would try and make that business work. But what we realized quite quickly was that that model didn't work, because it meant that we would spend a lot of time trying to help the businesses that were born from Spring Age, or the ideas born from Spring Age, turn into businesses. And it meant that we were kind of not taking care of our own business and our own model. So after some time, after like doing these things and coming up with these ideas and building these businesses, I mean, we thought we were building businesses at that time, we decided to change our model. So our model became quite clear, in that we would go to big corporate organizations like a consultancy, and we would find a challenge that they needed solving. We would have a criteria in terms of what type of challenge we wanted to solve. So we would say, if, for example, we were working with SAB, we'd say, we're not going to help you sell more alcohol, for example. But if you are trying to make a positive change in our country, we will be able to help you. So, for example, SAB would give us a challenge to say, in order to keep our license to trade, we need to do our social responsibility. So we need ideas around programs that will help us with that. And so we would then go and recruit young people of uncommon connections to come together and come up with these ideas for these big corporates. What was the magic was that we used to try and make this whole process beneficial for the young people. So firstly, the people that would recruit to come to the process would people who have an internal motivator with the challenge that we had. So for example, sometimes someone would come to the challenge because they'd say, you know what, I know someone that died from a car accident, so I'd love to come to this because I'd like to provide a solution to irresponsible drinking, for example. Someone else would say, you know, maybe my dad was a alcoholic, and so that's why they would want to come. You know, people would have individual motivators, and that's how we would invite people. And then we would make sure that it's worth it for those people to meet each other. So we would have people that were really incredible, and so that when they met each other, they were just like, oh my gosh, we in the space together. This is so cool. So we created a cohort of people who are interested in each other. And then we would tell the corporate that they needed to do something cool for the young people, because these young people didn't necessarily need money from these corporates, because some of them had their own jobs, some of them had their own companies that they were running. But what kind of an experience would we create for these young people? So things like, if we were working with the brewery, we'd take them on those Peroni yachts and take them, you know, those kind of cool things that maybe would be cool at those days. Anyways, were cool for young people. And so, yeah, that was kind of like the the kind of model that we had at that time. And we just replicated this model, doing it for different companies, asking, coming up with different solutions for different organizations, working with different people. And another thing that we used to make sure that we did is that within each spring break was what the process was called. We would invite the highest person in the organization to be in the room with those young people. And so, for example, with Woolworths, we'd have Simon Suzman in the room with the young people. So in case there were any entrepreneurs who were interested to interact with Woolworths one day, they would be able to have access to that person in that process as well. So yeah, that's how our process started. And yeah, that's a mouthful.
It is super interesting. I love the idea of like just like the reciprocity within the process and the fact that like actually these people didn't financially need to be here, but yeah, like they felt the need to sort of lend their voices to the problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
Perhaps as a follow-up question a little bit, and you might kind of touched on it a little bit as well already, but what are some of the things you wish you had known in the earlier parts of sort of coming up with this business?
Wow. I think it would have been around, so I guess the model, right? We could have maybe at an earlier point changed the model quicker. But you know, when you're an entrepreneur, your idea is your idea and it's the best idea ever. And so I think just knowing that ideas don't come out fully formed, if I knew that rule earlier on, or if we had knew that rule earlier on, it would have been maybe faster for us to run our process. But you know what? I think it's fine. Like in retrospect, I'm like every moment, every process was what we needed for that time. And we appreciate everything that we learned along the way. If I would fast forward, and maybe I think you're going to ask me about this fast forward, but it would be the power of negotiating higher. That's something that I wish I would have known a little bit better. But yeah, we'll probably have that conversation in a few minutes.
Yeah, Nelly. No, I mean, that's a really good kind of reflection and lesson learned. I think just reflecting on what you were saying earlier, one of the questions is around how easy is it to go to a big corporate and say, we've got some young people who've got some wonderful ideas, give us some brain space and time to listen to us. I mean, that seems, in hindsight, you've made it seem really easy to do, but I think young people, and we had Youth Day a couple of weeks ago, young people, particularly in South Africa, but I think globally, don't always feel like you're not always given the time and your voice doesn't always have, you don't always get the platform to have the opportunity. So thinking about you and Raylene walking into the doors of these corporates and saying, hey, we've got a great idea. We've got some young minds. We don't want to work on selling more alcohol. What else can we help you with? I mean, how do you navigate that as a process?
Sure. Thanks for that question. I think, I mean, you're right. One of the triggers for us as well to start this business was that we were just so irritated at listening to everyone call young people tomorrow's leaders. It was so irritating because if you looked at the facts and in terms of how young our population is, and at that time, just looking at the average leader on our continent, we were just like, oh, we don't have time to be waiting. And actually people calling young people tomorrow's leaders kind of saying, wait your turn, right? But wait until tomorrow, and tomorrow sometimes never comes. So it wasn't always easy. I mean, I remember explicitly going to one gentleman, which we won't name and shame.
We're very open to naming and shaming.
Maybe. Let's see if I get brave. Okay, let's see if I get brave. But I don't want to right now. But we then because he's quite well known. But we went and shared with him the concept and what we were doing and everything. And he was like, excuse me, I can't imagine myself giving. And in fact, we hadn't even asked him for 10 million, but he came up with a number because he was doing some ESD stuff. But he was like, I can't imagine myself giving ESD 10 million to two young girls. I can't even trust that. So we would find ourselves in those kinds of situations where people are just blatantly tell you that because you were young and because you're a woman, they would never give that kind of money to you because they didn't trust you. And how we navigated that is saying, okay, cool, maybe our product is not for him, and we just leave him and go into the next one, because we thought that the people that it resonated with were the people that we would want to work with. And so we chose, I mean, sometimes you don't have that luxury, but we kind of chose who we wanted to work with. And the people that understood it at the beginning were our people. And we thought those kinds of people that kind of block the way at the beginning, those people are not the early adopters. And so at that time, those are the people that you don't focus all your energy on. And the only way to kind of win them over ultimately is by showing them success, right? Yeah. And no hard feelings, because you're like, oh, well, they probably need to learn something. They've probably been scarred or whatever the case is. So yeah, that's kind of how we navigated it. And you know, big corporates are another ball game. I know Buhle asked me about Millboards, and that was something that we created later on in the game. But when we got into corporate, we also realized that it was a space where young people couldn't really navigate their space that well, and that it wasn't conducive at times for young people to kind of voice their opinions in a very relevant, seriously taken way, than being told, yes, young people can sit here and let's just listen to you guys and nothing gets done with it. So that's when we created the Millboard idea. But we tried to kind of just focus on the people that were our champions and then got working with those guys.
No, that absolutely makes sense. I think especially when you are building something and you have momentum, it's easy to move with those who want to move and engage, as opposed to trying to convince the naysayers. You know, they'll meet you when you're on the road. They didn't want to be part of the process at the beginning. So I think that absolutely makes a lot of sense. Maybe switching gears, and you mentioned corporates. I guess the next phase of Spring Age's journey was kind of selling to a corporate, and you sold to one of the biggest consulting firms, Deloitte. Can you just talk us through that process? How did you, why was Deloitte the right partner? Is it like dating? Did you have to speak to lots of different organizations to find the right fit? And what about them? Why were they the right partner for you at that next stage of your growth as a business? Okay.
Awesome. Nice question. I mean, I think it is like dating, but we were dating up, and we actually didn't, we actually just thought, okay, firstly, we wanted to grow, and we wanted to think about how do we go into new markets with this idea, because we had done a little bit of these spring breaks in the Netherlands and other parts of the world. We were like, oh, you know, we can't be not going into the rest of Africa with this product and this offering. Okay, so we wanted to grow, and we were saying, you know, growth doesn't mean we have to do it on our own. So maybe we need to join venture. This is the dating up part, right? So we're like, oh, we'll just ask Deloitte to join venture with us. So we were just talking about it. And I think Raylene went once to a conference, I think it was at Gibbs, where she then heard a talk, and Deloitte was speaking about the future of consulting being about collaboration. And we're like, oh, geez, this is what we are doing. In fact, it's collaboration, but it's just in a different format because it's youth-led, blah, blah, blah. We started having a conversation, and the guy that she had met there was a guy who was in the mergers and acquisitions team, and we started having the conversation with them. That conversation took about like 2 years, to be honest, because when you start your own business, it's not easy to kind of let go, because initially we had thought that this would be a joint venture and we'd go to clients together and Deloitte would do a piece and we would do a piece, and that actually wasn't it. It turned when Deloitte was like, well, we really like what you guys are doing, and we love some of the client spaces that you guys in, and it started it turning into an acquisition conversation, which we were not even thinking about, to be honest. We were thinking about growing, and we were thinking about what does growing mean without necessarily thinking about, oh, for us to grow, or we need to sell our business, etc. That process was tough. It was long. We had to make a decision with Ray in terms of kind of what it meant in terms of the authenticity of our idea and selling it into a big corporation. Why we chose Deloitte is that I think at some point we were like, what do they stand for? And if you've probably seen a lot of things from Deloitte, and their purpose is around making an impact that matters, and that's something that resonated with us. So we were like, well, this is an organization that has the aspiration to be a leading organization that makes an impact that matters. And we were like, well, that kind of resonates with us. And yeah, so we went through the process, and we didn't have money to kind of get lawyers, but luckily we had lots of clever lawyer friends who were able to help us through the process. And I think we did have someone who was doing the stuff for us pro bono. So that helped us in our negotiation process. And yeah, it took long, but eventually we decided that we would sell the business 100% to Deloitte. And that's what we did. For the last few years, we had to kind of learn how to embed the product that we have into consulting, and then came up with new products, which was the Millennial Board, which is one thing that I spoke about earlier on. And so yeah, that was our process. Obviously much more detail, but yeah, you can ask questions if you have around that. Yeah.
Oh, that's super interesting. As someone who has a background in mergers and acquisitions, like, I can tell you it's not an easy feat. Yeah. And something people really struggle with, to be honest, in these processes very often is really around knowing your own value and being able to sort of negotiate. So how did you guys sort of walk around asking for money and going, actually, this is what we feel as if our business is actually worth?
That was the hardest thing, that was so hard, because also it's intangibles, right? So sometimes as an entrepreneur or a startup, you've got these intangibles that you don't know what to put the value to. So it's kind of like this game is kind of like, it's a guessing game, I guess. And I guess when you look at some of your assets that you have, and then the intangibles, but then how do you put a price to that? And then I guess later on, then you realize, I mean, you find out these things, how others were paid, and you're like, yo, okay, I could have been better at that, you know, but that's a story for another day or a book. Yeah, it is hard. But you know, at the end of the day, we were proud of what we were able to do. And so for us, the story was what we had decided on. We said, you know what, this story is something that's going to inspire a young person from Alex or Raylene is from Mthatha. So we were just like, you know, young people from those places can learn and can see what is possible, and that makes us proud. So which then for us was that, okay, this is the beginning, you know. And so yeah, that's what made us calm about the evaluation process.
No, you're right. It is a journey. We can't wait to read your book.
That's out there.
Maybe just one last thing, just thinking about being in a corporate. I mean, obviously, as entrepreneurs, you then sold your business. You've described yourself as an intrapreneur. What is that? And how do you transition from being an entrepreneur to an intrapreneur?
Yeah. Okay. So as you may know, right now I work for the Deloitte UK firm. And yeah, I've described myself as an entrepreneur a lot of times because, well, entrepreneurship for me is kind of like the process of coming up with an idea and being able to make that idea happen. And I think a lot of times in corporates, you have very smart people with lots of great ideas. And sometimes the ideas just sit somewhere. Because of the big processes, nothing happens with the ideas. So the reason why I've described myself as an entrepreneur is that for some reason, I've been given the permission to be able to kind of, whichever space I get myself in Deloitte is to be able to kind of rethink whatever it is that I'm working on. And I've been given the permission to do that. And so, and because I've been an entrepreneur, I get forgiveness if I do something. It's like, oh, you entrepreneur, this is how you do things. So I get the permission. So now I'm in corporate, but I kind of look after a certain department. And I get to kind of rethink how we go to market, and which is my strength. And yeah, that's what I get to do. And I enjoy doing that. So whatever the product is, but the ability to kind of work with the team and think about, okay, how do we reimagine what we're already doing and how do we do it differently and be able to take those ideas and make them happen. So that becomes my role in corporate these days.
Nelly, I hate to even ask this because we've had a lot of males on the podcast before, and this is a question we would never ask them because we live in the world that we live in. But how do you really balance it all, to be honest? Your career, the high-powered job, the family, the kids, the marriage. How do you have time to yourself? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you know what? Actually, it's a relevant one because you have to ask it because that's just how the world is, right? I think what makes it work for us, for our family, I think it's one that my husband and I see ourselves as a team. When we were in South Africa, we also had Usis Nora, who used to help us at home, she actually gave us this concept that we are a team. Like, everyone in our household is a team. So therefore, if we're a team, everyone has to pull their weight for everybody else and for the bigger goal of the family. And so I think the first thing would be that you kind of have someone or a partner who kind of is a team member. And I don't have traditional woman roles in the house, like cooking or that kind of thing, like in a traditional sort of way. But actually Charlie cooks more than I do, but we kind of like work at the family thing together as a team. And because we both have careers, we understand what it means to be career people, and therefore we create the space for each other to kind of try and succeed in that. So I just have someone in which we work at this together. It's not easy all the time because there's this emotional guilt that you sometimes have. Well, I have as a woman, in that now that we're in the UK, our children go to nursery, but they go to nursery from like 9 to 5. And sometimes when I go pick them up, I feel so guilty. I'm like, oh my gosh, my children have been at school the whole day. Like, I haven't played with them. Well, I'll play with them when they get back home or in the evenings or on weekends. But I feel like for a very long period of time they're at school, and so I have a bit of guilt around it, but I kind of have to forgive myself because I know why they're at school. They're in a place where people love them, they're creating their own relationships with people. I mean, one is one and 2 months, and the other one's 2.5, so it's kind of hard, right? But you just, I don't know, you just watch other moms, I guess. You learn, you ask questions. I get nearly time. So my husband and I have this thing where I always have to get nearly time. And so when I'm doing nearly time, he's with the children, and then he will need his time. And then I'll be with the children. So I think how it works for now is the fact that we have a team, as exhausting as it is at times. We know what are the things that we love. And one of the things that's important to me is my career. And so we all understand that. And we got into this understanding that. So we figure out how it works. So, I mean, shame, our children, as small as they are, we kind of tell them, oh, mommy has to work now, or mommy's on a work call. And my daughter will come and say, mommy, are you on a work call? If I'm by my desk. And then I'll say, yes, I'm on a work call. Okay, I'll come afterwards. So shame. But, you know, we try and figure out the balance.
Got to teach them young. At least she knows, like, if you want to do boss moves, you got to be on a work call like mommy, hey?
Exactly. Exactly. We have to be that inspiration to them. But figuring out the balance, you know, I think we're learning. I think we're learning about this whole balance thing. And yeah, I think we just choose for the things that we want to do and then focus on those at that time, in that moment.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think these are words of wisdom that all of us could learn something from, to be honest. Amazing. Okay, so I guess maybe sort of, I guess we're winding down a little bit here. Sort of the next thing, maybe you could just, what advice would you give to other young entrepreneurs across the continent who will look at your journey and go, actually, maybe this is something I would want to do. Well, obviously, it's not specifically Spring Age, but like, start my own business, like, yeah, expand, sell to a corporate. Like, what advice would you give them around, be it starting, be it growing, be it whatever you think is quite important to know from your journey?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is, I mean, we hear this all the time, and it's that whole start by starting, because our ideas don't come out fully formed, right? So we don't actually know what this thing is going to end up being, although we have a vision for it, but we don't exactly know what it's going to look like. So we have to kind of start and learn as you go along. And so that is kind of be the first thing I would say. And don't do it alone, you know. You know, having a partner, for me, having Raylene and us having each other was just the most amazing journey of my life, because it was just that it meant that the hard times were halved between the two of us. And when we celebrated, it was a really double celebration. So try not to do it alone. Try and find someone that you can connect with, someone that you share the same values. You don't have to have the same skill. Respect that other people have different skills from you, and work with those people, work with the people that you connect with. And I would say that, you know, just now that I'm here in the UK and I'm just thinking about home, it's just, you know, because we have so many challenges back in the at home, it's like so many opportunities are there. You know, it's ground for kind of growth, and what a privileged position for entrepreneurs to be in a space where we can spot opportunities and challenges and try and solve for those challenges. So respect the places that you are in and start there, because from there, then you can grow. Then you can be able, if you want to sell your business, you can think about that. There was something that we had read at some point after we sold our business about building to sell. So if people are thinking about the way in which they build their business now, they can build it in a way to have assets in place so that they can be able to sell their business one day. So that's something that people can look at. And I'd say, you know, read books, follow entrepreneurs. We used to buy Entrepreneurship Magazine, you know, those kinds of things that will inspire you in your journey, because it's not as glamorous. It does get hard, and but it's lots of fun. I enjoyed it and I still do. And yeah, so that's kind of the advice I'd give to everyone out there.
Thanks, Nelly. That's really, really great advice, both practical, but also inspiring. I really like that you said how it's important to not go it alone, because, you know, it can be quite a lonely journey, but yeah. Even if you aren't the entrepreneur, you know, you could find great people doing stuff to kind of back and build and partner. And so I think, you know, what that theme that you're talking about, partnership, is going to be so important around what young people can do, but collectively, you know, together. So So I think that's super powerful and important.
Yeah. Thank you.
So yeah. Nelly, just for you. So where to from here? What's next? What's next on the horizon for you?
Well, so this adventure that I've taken is for my family. So in February or last year, we decided that we would do a family adventure. So I'm right now in a space where I am focusing on family for now, in that we've taken this adventure to come to the UK and we're exploring giving our children an opportunity to live in a different country. And then whilst I'm here, I think one of the things is I want to learn about the UK, the market, like an established market and the corporates within this space. So just do a little bit of that. I think it's very hard. I don't know. I haven't really done it just being an entrepreneur and a new mom at the same time, but I think it can be a very hard thing. So I think having a little bit of stability whilst being an entrepreneur is kind of like the move that I've decided to make. And yeah, we'll see. I think that's a question that's on my mind as well in terms of what's my next step. We'll see. I mean, I'll obviously go back into the space of building or creating something new. I mean, I've got so many ideas every day. My husband keeps saying, "Oh God, did you get tired?" Because I'll just be like, "Oh my gosh, this housing problem—it's such a problem. What if we could do this?" And he's just like, "Don't you get tired of coming up?" I'm like, "They just come," and so, but I'm just giving myself the space to kind of be with my family and kind of explore a kind of a established market. And then who knows? I'll come back to your podcast one day if you guys may have me and share another story.
We would love that.
Nelly, thank you so much for your time. I think it was a very educational few minutes. Yeah, I feel very inspired, but also it was very educational. And we do look forward to having you back very, very soon with your new venture. If you want to cut us in from a shareholding perspective, feel free.
I do need clever people. So yeah, I will come talk to you guys. But thank you so much, Tatenda and Buhle, for having me. It was really nice speaking to you both as well.
The Gist is creating new African narratives through disseminating key lessons and best practices from some of the continent's leading entrepreneurs and businesses.